Buccaneers fans, here he is, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Ira Kaufman. Lee DeKemper not here with us today, Ira. This is tragic. Absolutely tragic.
He's out of town, and he's not in Las Vegas, in case our listeners are curious.
Not in Las Vegas. I don't know if people were looking for him there, but I guess they could. I'm Steve Isbitz, and we are talking here. Thanks to everybody who subscribes on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Podcast Addict, other platforms, at Joe Bucks Fan. You know, you can leave a review for Ira. He loves to hear those things. We don't usually ask for him, but, you know, why not? Throw a review out there. The sage, he's feisty, he's fiery. Unbelievable. Ira, I'm very excited about this summer vacation event at Bill Curry Ford. Zero payments until the fall. So you can buy a new vehicle at factory pricing right now.
No invoice for 3 months, at least. No invoice.
Get $1,000 more for your trade with what they're doing right now. Get the Ira Kaufman discount. Get family-owned service and care from a third-generation family dealership since 1960. And you can do this right now. And Sean Sullivan, the GM at Bill Curry Ford, he's told me, and he said it on his Best in Class podcast, this ends at the end of the month. The factory pricing from Ford, you know, Bill Curry Ford just can't pull that out of the sky. So check out their website, BillCurryFord.com. Start shopping. And if you need a used vehicle, they got all sorts of prices and selections. The selection's real good right now, better than it used to be.
It's worth taking advantage of this factory pricing, Steve. It makes a difference.
Definitely. In your trade, it's not going to be worth more in 5 months. Get it done. BillCurryFord.com. And check out their mobile service, their service department, whatever it is, 67 bays over there. It looks like a gigantic Walmart, just the service department.
100 loaner vehicles, Steve.
Unreal. BillCurryFord.com. I love I love supporting family businesses. Ira, what are you doing with yourself this weekend before we get cooking here?
Speaking of cooking, I believe I'm making hamburgers tonight, Steve. Hamburgers, red onion. I got the cheese, you know, the coleslaw. I've got the beans. I got the macaroni salad. Steve, it's a spread. And I'm a charcoal man. I told you. Every year, I buy a new charcoal grill.
Every year?
Every year. Not the ones for $200. I buy the ones for $69.
You know, you can just buy a new top on Amazon for like 12
bucks. You
know
what? I could get one of those grits.
New grate. Yeah.
You need a new grate. But I like to change the colors, you know, red, blue, whatever. And
spray paint.
You know, back on the tennis court, Steve, I'm gearing up for a big match against you. And our listeners are very curious about this match, because there's a lot on the line. There's some cosmic donuts on the line.
I think we might have to wait till it cools off. It's just not too enjoyable to play, but we could do an 8 a.m.
Could we play for a Delco sandwich, Steve?
Are you making these patties yourself, or are you being a baby and buying the pre-made patties?
No pre-made patties. Ground sirloin, not this lean garbage that runs like a red river, and you don't even want to touch the stuff. No ground round, none of that nonsense. Ground sirloin, $8.79 a pound, Steve, but I'll do it. And I'm still screaming at Publix. What are you doing with these ribeyes on sale for $13.99, $17.99? This stuff used to be $9.99 2 years ago. You can't jump up something 50% in 2 years. Shame on you. Shame on you. That's why those steaks are staying in that storage case and nobody's buying them.
Yeah. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. They care. They are real people. And when you have that disaster, that ugly time in your home, water damage, you're the water damage whisperer, flood, fire, mold. And, you know, people ask me sometimes, or I've gotten a couple of wise guy comments or emails, social media, whatever. Oh, you know, a flood and water damage is the same thing. No, it's not. It is not. Water can come from a lot of different ways, and it's not as simple as you think it is.
Florida, you own your house long enough, a pipe's going to burst. It's inevitable.
Oh,
it's going to happen.
It will happen, and it's awful. Been there. Don't want to be there again. I wish I had been there with Florida's Elite Restoration. Get to their website, Florida'sElitereStoration.com. See what they can and will do for you free to evaluate your home when you have that problem. Fire. I had a fire at my house 15 years ago. I ran the exhaust fan. Awful. And so, you know, these things happen. It wasn't anybody's fault. But you need to know who to call, especially storm season is here. The Ira Kaufman discount is available for you at Florida's Elite Restoration. Simply mention Ira or Joe Bucks Fan when you first call, and owner Josh Martin will put $500 in your pocket after your free evaluation if you sign up for them to do the work for you, restoring your property And they can even be a one-stop shop. If you need a new kitchen because of a flood, they can do all that too. They are full service. Florida's Elite Restoration.
Now, let's get back to Jalen McMillan for a second. What an exquisite time to be a Buck fan right now. What a time. Kings of the division. No reason to think they're going to fall from their perch. I don't see anybody coming up. I think Carolina will be a little bit better. But New Orleans stinks. Although you always defend the Saints, Steve. I don't think you're doing that anymore.
Not this year. No way.
You're not doing that anymore. You go, Ira, you're underestimating the Saints. No, not anymore. And Atlanta's a mess, in my opinion. Unless this guy Penix is the second coming of Michael Vick, which I don't think he is. So, hell of a time to be a Bucks fan right now. And there's no drama. Steve, there's no drama about this team. Light loves that. Bowles loves it. The Glazers love it. You know what the big topic in talk radio and sports talk TV when it comes to the Bucks? You know what the topic is? Why isn't anybody talking about the Bucks? Why are they under the radar? I think that's outstanding. If you're a Buck fan, keep them right where they are.
So no speeding ticket drama with Shedeur Sanders?
No, no Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, you know.
You don't like a little drama, Ira?
You know, the news is, you know, Baker Mayfield having a camp for kids. That's the news. Buck fans they should relish this.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. So Baker Mayfield had some sort of kids camp.
I think it was last Friday.
Yeah. At $1, you know, the Bucks help him sponsor everything, put it together. It was inside what we call the Glazer Shed.
The bubble.
Which is the bubble. You know, a lot of kids out
there.
Yeah,
big turnout.
And I watched the Bucks produced a video, 15 minutes, a lot of camp footage, and Baker mic'd up, running around, talking to the kids. And he clearly enjoys it, you know, loves his role here as the leader of the franchise and tried to interact with everybody. But one thing was interesting there, Ira. The kids were egging him on to see how far he could throw a football.
Oh, now wait a minute. We don't need him blowing out his right arm over there, Stevie.
That's exactly what I was thinking. So he's in the end zone.
First of all, he ain't Doug Williams. He ain't throwing the ball 92 yards on a line over here.
Well, you know, I think Doug Williams' arm strength has gotten better over the years.
Maybe, but I've seen some of the films, too.
Every decade, it hits another one. So, you know, we hear now a lot about, hey, Josh Allen can throw maybe up to 80 yards and... You know, stories of Patrick Mahomes. Oh, he could throw 85 yards in practice.
Herbert can fling it, you know.
But you know what? A lot of that stuff becomes tall tales. The one thing that was legit was Josh Allen, before he was drafted in 2018, he did a video for ESPN. You know, they came out to do a feature on him, Wyoming out there, with all that stuff. And they asked him how far he can throw a ball. That there's, hey, we've heard you can do this and that. And he said, well, let's see right now. And
where did he stand?
This was on an interview on a field, Josh Allen, but the video's there, and you see him step up, and he cranks the throw 77 yards in the air.
In the air.
Okay. You know, there's never been a completion in the NFL of that distance in the air or anything like that. Aaron Rodgers, obviously, the king of the Hail Mary. So Baker Mayfield is getting egged on by the kids, and he wasn't exactly warmed up. Yeah, he was throwing a lot of short throws to kids all day. And I guess that warms your arm up, but he wasn't.
So they challenged him. Yeah. They challenged Mayfield.
He wasn't exactly throwing 40-yard routes to anybody. And so he steps up, throws a rope on a line.
Where did he throw from? Where was he?
He was in the end zone.
Oh, he was in the end zone.
And, you know, I watched the video, slowed down the video, watched it a few times, and it was a clear video. And he threw the ball 70 and a half yards. 71 yards.
It dropped down on like the 29-yard line or something?
Yeah. And he didn't take some crazy running start. A typical thing that you might see if he rolled right.
Stepped up in the pocket.
Stepped up, you know, took a couple of big steps and fired.
That's pretty good.
So I did a little.
I can't hit a golf ball that far, Steve.
So I hope Todd Bowles keeps track of that, you know, because we're trying to make sure Todd Bowles knows, hey, we don't give up at the end of games. We don't not call timeout in the second round of the playoffs. And. You know, I did some research on this, and Mayfield actually completed a 65-yard in the air Hail Mary with the Browns. The big one last year that got all the headlines, Jaden Daniels against the Bears. We all remember that crazy play. That also went 65 yards in the air. And Mayfield also threw one out of the back of the end zone in a game with the Browns over 70 yards. He overthrew the Hail Mary. So he's got that arm strength, and it's often talked about, but you don't usually see it. But there you go. The guy can do it.
You think Josh Grizzard should be looking at that film right now, Stevie, and designing some long plays?
I don't know. I can't say that, but it's just worth noting that he does have that juice.
You think the seventh round pick should be looking at that video saying, hey, he can get the ball out there. All I got to do is get open.
Yeah, you also got a pass block for the amount of time it takes to get down the field 70
yards. Hey, speaking of pass block, Steve, there has been some chatter, and understandable, you know, coaches, they're never satisfied, nor should they be. And they're always looking for chinks in the armor. And there's sort of like suggestions that, hey, 40 sacks for as good as this offensive line, we got to cut that down to 26 sacks. It's too many. I'm not sure I go along with that because for every sack that Mayfield's taking, he's also making another play where it takes extra time to let the guy break out into the open. And I don't need Mayfield going into a new season thinking about I can't get sacked. I'm going to throw the ball into the ground. He ain't Tom Brady. They're two different quarterbacks, and Brady's got a different kind of mindset. Let Mayfield be Mayfield.
He's got to be Mayfield, and there was that, I guess it was almost famous last week when you asked Mayfield about, hey, coaches don't want you to run, and he said, you know, I'm here to make plays.
Coach,
you know?
Is coach, and I'm trying to win.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm trying to win games, buddy. But if you want to nitpick Mayfield, it is those decisions. It goes back to the broader decisions. So, yeah, he led the NFL in interceptions, okay, last year, tied for the lead. I don't have a problem with it. If our good buddy Lee DeKemper was sitting here, he wouldn't have a problem with it.
I don't think it was an outlandish total.
No, but it's still the league lead. But Drew Brees, Brett Favre, Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning, all those guys led the NFL at least once in interceptions.
Nobody holds that against them.
Eli Manning, I believe, did it three times, and he's up for Hall of Fame contention. So this happens with good quarterbacks. But when you throw in the fact, Ira, that Mayfield also led the NFL in fumbles last year. Now, you can't spin the two of those into some sort of fairy tale.
That can be worked on. That can be worked on.
Yeah.
No question.
And it's also an X factor in some ways for this season because Mayfield fumbled 13 times, but they only lost two of those fumbles. Now, that's some...
That's just good fortune.
That's good fortune. Exactly. Lee would say, you know, turnovers, luck. You know, obviously, there are different types of turnovers, and, you know, it's not all luck, but a lot of that's luck. So, guys like Justin Herbert, Stafford, C.J. Stroud, Jared Goff, they all had six fumbles last year, and they also, each of them, lost like two fumbles. So Mayfield's got to cut that.
I don't mind working on where Mayfield should carry the ball when he's running. That's legitimate. But to get into his mind, you know, that throw the ball away, the first second that things start to break down, I don't think that's his personality.
Well, the good news is I don't think he'll listen to him even if they go there.
There you go.
And he doesn't have a offensive coordinator who's just some blowhard getting his head, hey, Baker, you can't do this. There's no threat of him coming out of a game. Todd Bowles isn't going to start ripping him. This isn't Bruce Arians saying, you know, who would be like, hey, you MF-er, if you do this again, I don't care who you are.
Now if they're losing, that'll change things.
Sure.
That'll change.
But I think it would happen almost organically. Like Mayfield would be like, hey, I just lost us the game because
I can't do that.
So I think they're in a good place. I don't think they'll get in his head, but, you know, it's always possible if they're chirping at him more this year, and we heard QB coach Thad Lewis say that, you know, they're leaning on him a little bit, and you always know Bowles is talking about turnovers. If he starts off the season with a few turnovers in the first couple of games, it could get in his head.
You know, I'm looking around the NFC, Steve. I'm looking around. Some people think the AFC is clearly better. I'm not sure that's true. The Super Bowl champ happens to reside in the NFC. The Lions are really good, although I think they've had a shaky offseason, Steve. I'm looking at the Niners. I think they've taken a step back. Green Bay, you know, they're good. I don't know that they're better than the Bucks. And Washington's coming on, and they're not going away with Daniels. And they got a little better. I don't think it would take that much for the Bucks to approach the front echelon of teams in the conference.
Well, they did it last year.
And I don't think the Eagles have had a great offseason either.
I get what you're saying, Ira, about the upper echelon of the conference, but they were the number three seed last year. You know, I get that the Rams sort of tanked at the end, kind of playing the odds of resting some guys and not caring exactly if they had the third or the fourth seed. But, you know, I know what you're saying. They should win more games on paper, and you look at the rest of the NFC as well. One thing that isn't talked about, you brought up the division earlier. The Falcons, and I'll leave you with this before we go to break. The Falcons, they open up at at home against the Bucks. Okay, that's a huge game. I've called it a must-win. You think I'm nuts, but it's still a critical game for so many reasons.
Well, I say that the Bucks should show them who's boss right off the bat.
Absolutely. Week two. Okay, so that's a tough game for Atlanta. And you'd think right now, as we sit here, the Bucks should win that game on a Saturday morning. Okay, so the Falcons then go to Minnesota. Week three, they go to Carolina. Those are two tough spots for a Falcons team that has some challenges.
So you want to start them 0-3, Steve?
Week four, they are back home for the Commanders. And then the Falcons have the worst scenario that a lot of teams would say. They have a week five bye. Nobody wants a week five bye. And what happens when they come out of the bye? They've got the Bills at home, and then they go to San Francisco. I mean, that is the worst opening schedule in the league. They could easily be 1-5, 2-4.
Now, Steve, let's not portray the Panthers as the 66 Green Bay Packers.
No.
They make it easy. But it's a road game, as you said. They could be 1-3 going into the bye week. And in that scenario, maybe the bye comes at a good time. But like you just said, coming out of the bye, you better be ready. You better be ready to go. It goes back to what you said last week, Steve, and a couple of times on this podcast. Stop falling behind two games, Bucks, by midseason, and then you got to rally and go 5-1 and 6-1. No. Don't. That doesn't work this year. Go take command of the division, and then you got you can make your own calls down the stretch, not based on where you are in the division.
All right, Ira. Well, look at the Sage all fired up for opening day. Ira, we were talking earlier about the Falcons' brutal schedule. You know, I still go back to that week 18 of last year. I've mentioned the Bucks struggling to beat the Saints in the fourth quarter. Okay. But what was going on at the same time? Well, I was at a must-win game because the Falcons, if the Bucks lost and the Falcons beat Carolina, the Falcons would have been the NFC South champions.
Because they own the tiebreaker.
They had the two-game tiebreaker. Both teams would have finished with 9 wins. Well, the Falcons lost in overtime to Carolina. So,
that's disgraceful. That's disgraceful.
It was disgraceful for them, but it also was disgraceful for the Bucks to be losing in the fourth quarter to the Saints. So it's a wacky division, You know, we love the Bucks so much, and we believe that they're, you know, you've talked about them being an 11-win team. Other fans think 12, 13. But, you know, it is that close.
These you know, it's funny. Really I don't even remember that they were that close to losing against the Panthers. Steve, to be fair, Carolina was very competitive in the final month. They stopped turning the ball over. They got a good running back in Hubbard, and their young quarterback was playing a lot better after he was benched, right, midseason.
Oh,
Steve,
yeah.
Turned out to be a good decision by Canales. Good decision. He came back better than ever, giving Carolina fans a lot of optimism for the upcoming season. But, Steve, you can't let the Panthers stay close to the point where they're going to spring a big upset in a game that you got to win. That's disturbing. Even looking back, it's disturbing.
For the Bucks.
For the Bucks.
Exactly. Well, that's what makes this year slightly even more interesting in some ways. Week 16, week 18 of the 2025 season, the Bucks have the Panthers. So if you believe that the Panthers are getting better, that they're on an improving track, they're playing them at the wrong time. And that's one of the parts of this schedule where I look at it where you've said you think the Bucks are going to go 5-1 in the NFC South, and that's almost mandatory for them. I say it's going to be real hard, and part of that is because you don't have the Panthers till week 16 and week 18. Hard to beat any solid division team that late.
You know
back
what
to back.
Steve, you know what I was thinking as you brought up the struggle against Carolina? It seems to me that people are, you know, they're always trying to parse words with Bowles. What did he mean by, you know, I saw something in the films of going over every game. I saw something, and it's going to help me change things, and nobody knows what the hell he's talking about. I hope it's that you play a little more press coverage and not 12 yards. But, Steve, the other thing that people are trying to figure out, killer instinct. What the hell's Bowles talking about? Killer instinct. I don't know what that means. Does it mean you got to squash a team in the first half? You got to be up 24-3. You know what it very well could mean? Games like the Carolina game at the end. That's killer instinct. You're better than them. You need the game. We're playing our regulars. Mayfield's not sitting. Trask isn't playing. You got to beat up on those guys. You got to be up by 20 after three quarters. It didn't happen, Steve. That's killer. And the year before, Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, but down the stretch, during that really good stretch that they had to pull out of that malaise, they got waxed by the Saints. I believe it was a home game.
Oh, they got clobbered.
Was it 38-3 or something?
No, it wasn't that bad, but they got beat soundly at home, yeah.
Where's the killer instinct? The Saints were going nowhere at that time. So I think that's what Bowles is talking about. You gotta destroy these teams that you're better than, especially down the stretch when you need it. And they didn't do it. They didn't do it last year.
You're on the money, Ira, but I also think it extends personally, like player by player. I think Bowles sees, I mean, fans see it too, a lot of missed sacks, right? Joe Tryon-Shoyinka, the king of I got real close and it didn't pull the guy down. Yaya Diaby had a bunch of missed sacks last year. And
Diaby covering Eckler in the left flat, you know, off by a fingertip. Trying to get Daniels down.
Look at the Washington game. You know, crunch time came and there were screw-ups. And you also look at Kancey late in that game, couldn't sack Jaden Daniels. He was there. Doesn't mean he's a bad player. Just means that they didn't get those plays when they really needed those plays.
And Washington made the plays.
And combined with the overall that, hey, you guys softened up too much. And that goes to that midseason slump that nobody can figure out why it happens. Hopefully it doesn't happen this year. But, yeah, they need to get nastier, need to get tougher. Hopefully that comes from Reddick. Hopefully that comes from the offensive line being together again.
Do you think, Steve, in his 3 years that Bowles has established a legitimate home field advantage? I think that's another subject where the Bucs can do a lot better. I don't see them being dominant at home like you think a team with that roster should be. I don't see it.
I mean, they haven't been bad. They haven't been exceptional. Last year we saw, unfortunately, they lost three in a row at home, Baltimore, Atlanta, and the 49ers.
And got smacked by Denver.
And they got smacked by Denver. So that's four losses. You don't want four home losses. They haven't been horrible at home, but that 49ers loss last year and certainly the Atlanta loss, those are, if you're a dominant home team, those are the games you win.
You should go 6-2 at home or 6-3 at home the years you got nine home games. If you're a top-notch team, Steve, you should.
Well, you think the Bucs have done anything to solve that, Ira? What's your they opened with two games on the road this year.
Well, I'm certainly not going to blame fan turnout for the Bucs' relative struggles at home. They got to make Raymond James a tougher place to play, Steve. They got to make it a tougher place to play. Get the fans involved from the beginning. I go back to that Denver game, Steve. They were so lethargic in that game from the start. They had no juice, and they were 2-0. And here comes Denver rolling in. Bo Nix did not get off to a great start as a rookie, his first couple of games. And he came into Tampa, and he ripped him a new one.
2 years ago, they were 5-3 at home, and that third loss was the game you mentioned a little bit ago to New Orleans, 23-13, to a bad New Orleans team that they needed that game. The Bucs entered that game 8-7, critical game, and it wasn't really close. Even though the final was 23-13, they got beaten soundly. And, you know, you could say that's another example of the home field advantage that they just haven't had in the way that they need it. But another area for the Bucs to improve, Ira. But you love this team. You love this team. You're drinking the water, and people should know that you're not Mr. Pie in the Sky every
year. I'm not. You know what I might be reading too much into, Steve? I might be. Reddick. I'm slightly concerned. I'm not worried, but I'm slightly concerned. First of all, I don't know if you got the same impression, but being around him, you know, in person, he's got a slight build. You know, he's not an imposing figure. Now, that hasn't mattered when he got 50 sacks, you know, in like four seasons, but before last year's debacle with the Jets. He's got the speed, you know, the body control to skirt around those tackles. But I think they're banking on him, Steve. You know, I can't count on David Walker. I mean, let's be realistic. Whatever Walker gives you, you know, hey, that's a hell of a thing for a fourth round
rookie. Rookie out of Central Arkansas, you know, give the guy a break.
You know, Diaby, you think he'll be better as a rusher than last year. But I'm not looking for him to be a double-digit sacker. Not necessarily. A lot of pressure on Reddick. A lot of pressure on Reddick. He's got a lot to prove, Steve. He's playing for a contract. And Drew Rosenhaus is now his representative. And you know Rosenhaus. He's as savvy as they come. And he's got to be talking to Reddick every freaking week going into the season saying, there's a lot of money on the table for you to make. Not necessarily to continue as a Buccaneer. Because, Steve, if you ask me right now, I don't know what you think. I don't think Reddick will be a Buccaneer in 26.
It depends how he performs. I think the best shot of that is if he's sort of like a middle-of-the-road player, like a an eight
sort of like an eight, seven eight, and a half.
Eight sack guy realizes, hey, I'm not going to get the big contract I'm looking for, but I'll sign this.
All of a sudden, he's Leonard Floyd.
I'll sign this two-year, $32 million deal, and I'll stay. Versus, you know, the big pass rushers are making 30-plus.
Now, if he stinks, they don't want him back.
Right.
If he gets 15 sacks, right, somebody's going to throw a lot of money at him.
Lee would lose his mind if he heard me say this, and some fans, I think, might freak out. But I don't think enhancing the pass rush, the edge rush, is really their greatest need this offseason. I really do think that the inside linebacker issues that they had last year in coverage just were so bad that
middle of the field
bigger issue, KJ Britt not being able to cover, and then they bring in other guys.
Is Levante part of it?
KJ Russell.
Is he part of that?
He wasn't. He was blitzing a lot more because obviously they blitz a lot. And I think if the Bucs had the same pass rush they had last year, same exact pass rush, and Servassier Dennis plays like a pretty good starting linebacker, or even Anthony Walker if he fills in for him, and they get Antoine Winfield back to a Pro Bowl level, we won't say all pro, and Bowles tightens up the pressure a little bit on the cornerbacks, not playing this crazy soft, I think they'll be just fine.
That's three ifs, Steve. You just uttered three ifs.
Well, but they're not
I can handle one if. You're giving me three.
Come on, Ira. They're not crazy ifs. Winfield comes back, plays kind of like his old self. Now, he doesn't have to be the greatest in the world. You get a decent middle linebacker in there, which you think you have, and the corners are playing with a little more energy because there's more competition. I think they would win 12 games like that.
Well, Steve, my point is simple. The sack total was good, 46. It was a good total. And I said it in week two. After week three, they had like four sacks. We were flipping out. And I said it right there on the show. By the time the season ends, they're going to be in the 40s because that's what Bowles does. He's always in the 40s.
And he got it done.
Right. However, I still think the pass rush was erratic. And it didn't come up big when they needed it to, like Kirk Cousins twice. He can't move. They didn't move him off his spot. He threw eight touchdowns. Eight in two games. If Reddick gets the job done, they get more consistency. And if Reddick gets the job done, that means Diaby's numbers are going to go up too. Steve, here's my only point. Now Bowles might get to the point where he blitzes when he wants to instead of because he has to. And I just think that whole thing could snowball into making this a much better defense.
Yeah, the pass rush. You were talking about that before. And while we have a lot of cool things to talk about to get to, I think it's just important to say, yeah, there's a lot of ifs. I know the Bucs need a better edge rush to win a Super Bowl, and that's the goal. That's this team's goal. But I think they can do so much damage and do so much with the same pass rush they had last year, just tightening up a couple of those other things that were just so ugly last year. The safety play, the middle linebacker play next to Lavonte David, some of the cornerback play with all those injuries. That is just such a nightmare.
And the run defense wasn't great, Steve.
No.
It wasn't great.
No, not at all. And I think part of that comes back to David just not being the guy he used to be. And, of course, some of it's up the gut. They did lose Kancey for his traditional early season calf injury.
Are you appalled? And I'm using that word on purpose, Steve. Are you as appalled as the head coach is and me, quite frankly, at seven interceptions? Are you stunned by it? Seven interceptions with all the passes that were thrown against the Bucs last season. I would say top five in most pass attempts against a particular defense. Steve, seven picks? No wonder Bowles is talking about the ball hawks. Can you blame him? And you're telling me that the pass rush is quite adequate over here.
Well, look, the Bucs would counter by saying the dropped interceptions. You know, we're looking at the dropped interceptions. No excuse. Ira Kaufman, don't blame my pass rush on balls going through Jamel Dean's hands.
And I say they didn't get their hands on enough balls. That's my counter.
Nobody's arguing you don't need a pass rush.
And Lee's not here to defend himself about takeaways and giveaways. But, Steve, I'm not even going to wait for Lee to come back. This nonsense about turnovers are overrated. That's garbage. That's absolutely garbage. You gotta look at the trends every year, Steve. The trends don't lie. The numbers don't lie. The teams at the bottom seven in turnover differential, they don't make the playoffs. This is every year.
It's a wonderful argument, Ira.
How can you argue against it?
I'll tell you how you can argue against it. I agree with you. I side.
Now, it's not always the same bottom seven teams. I understand that.
I side in your direction, but flip it around. If you're going to talk about turnovers on defense, then you got to talk about them a little bit on offense. So the Bucks top three, top four offense last year, depending on how you want to score it, which metric. And as I said earlier in the show, Baker Mayfield led the NFL in interceptions. Baker Mayfield led the NFL in fumbles. We had some key fumbles that cost the Bucks last year.
Bucky, that's why they had a negative turnover differential.
Bucky, right? Irving, negative turnover differential, but it really didn't slow them down necessarily.
You know where it screwed the Bucks, and it could happen again this year? This is the biggest point of all. You got a hell of an offense, and there's no reason to think this year's offense is going to be any worse than last year's, because now they got a first-round draft pick wide receiver who's going to be a really good player. Everybody else is back. Is Irving going to fall off the map in year two? Is Mayfield, he's 30 years old. He's in his prime. So that's my point. You got an offense that's very dangerous. That's the envy of a lot of teams around the league. And the defense isn't giving them a decent amount of series. And there's no better example than the Washington game. I mean, 7 series for an offense, the Bucks, and they still scored 20 points. 7 total series? You usually get 11 or 12. They got 7. Can I get a takeaway to give Mayfield a little room to operate? So, Steve, that's the numbers within the numbers. Give this offense more chances, and they're going to win more games.
Yeah, and of course you want more of those chances to be getting off the field on third down, and the other way is to get the ball back as well. Look, the defense sucked last year, and you've said it. You know, I just watched a draft on CBS Sports HQ. It was Kyle Long, the former Bears Pro Bowl guard, with one of his ex-Bears teammates. They were drafting defenses. They kind of had like a NFL draft-style exercise. Who's your first-round pick defense? And they talked about each one. The Bucks went off the board at 17.
Overall, defense.
You pick a defense, I pick one. Man. Work our way down. The Bucks went off the board at 17. Now, that's not good.
And I might accept that for this fall. I might accept it.
But in watching this thing, it felt kind of legitimate and fair. And it felt even more fair when every other NFC South team's defense went below the Bucks. In that draft, Carolina was 31. The Saints were 32. That's how bad.
And Atlanta's not very good either.
This division is perceived. I think Atlanta was like at 25. But even after the Bucks defense, the next choice was the 49ers. So when you look, if the Bucks do have the 17th ranked defense.
That's conjecture, though, Steve. It's conjecture.
It's complete conjecture. But that's pretty much where they were ranked last year. So, you know we need improvement to go where we need to go. There's so much optimism, but fans don't want to talk about it. You got to look at Vita Vea being 30. You got to look at Levante David being 35. And, you know, some question marks at safety. Can Winfield get back? And is Tyke Smith really a good NFL safety?
Legitimate question, Steve. Again, I'm not going to hold Winfield to 23 standards. That was extraordinary. That probably happens once in a career. If you're lucky, just like Levante David had that 2012 season, he really hasn't approached that statistically, Steve. Numerically, he hasn't.
Different defense, though, a different attacking style.
I think I would take the Buck defense being in the middle of the pack, Steve, because you and I are both so bullish on this offense. This is a really good offense, barring some major injuries. They're going to score points on everybody, or should.
They should.
Grizzard. And that's whether Godwin comes back for week one or not. I don't think they suffered that much. Now, look, Godwin's a hell of a player when healthy, and he was great before he got hurt last year. But you've mentioned it many times. The offense didn't fall apart when Godwin was sidelined.
No, the team had a winning record. The offense didn't fall apart. They've got plenty of weapons. It should be everything that we think it could be. Now, one thing I liked from Josh Grizzard, he did an interview a few weeks ago, actually, with the Tampa Bay Times, and he was asked about, is this going to be your offense? You know, how do you have to sort of ease your way in? You know, you're the new guy, but you are in charge. And he did not use a lot of the cliches that you might hear, like, well, I'm here to serve the head coach and, you know, I'm working on an approach with Todd Bowles and this. No, none of that. He said, you have to stick to your guns. That's something I know going into it. You never know when that's going to show up with communicating with players and coaches. But he said, ultimately, I have to stick to what I believe in. And everyone here at One Buck is going to know that at some point that we're doing this my way. And my name's on it. This is quotes from Josh Grizzard. And so he was very firm. He said, you know, if I have conviction, we're rolling with that. And I'll listen to anybody. He said, I know these coaches here are great, and the players are very thoughtful. If they want to come to me with something, I know that they thought it out.
Yeah, I'll consider it. I'll consider
extremely
it.
Well. But he was very firm. No, we're doing this my way, and that's it. And you won't hear that from a lot of 35-year-old who you just turned 35, young play callers who've never called a play.
Shows a lot of self-confidence. I don't mind that at all. Steve, we can only hope, I'll speak for myself, that Grizzard's way includes taking a few more shots downfield. Now, I'm not saying bombs away with this offense because they don't have Tyreek Hill. They've got Trey Palmer, who is still has a lot to prove on deep routes. Egbuka's not a speed burner, Steve. He's not. Neither is Evans.
I think Evans is still a deep threat, a legit deep threat.
If I was going to poke a few holes at the offense, and there aren't many holes to poke with an offense that was top five, the only one, Steve, top five rushing and throwing the ball, the only offense in the league that can boast that, I would take a few more shots. And you know my theory, Steve. You throw five deep balls, you're going to complete one. You'll get three incompletions, and you'll get a flag. Three incompletions, and you'll get one flag and one completion. I'll take that. You'll take a pass interference penalty, a spot foul. All of a sudden, you're 40 yards downfield, and you're going to get some incompletions. You're not going to complete 50% of your long balls, but you'll complete 20% of them.
No, and part of that comes back to Mayfield, in addition to Grizzard, because the Bucs, dink and dunk was the wrong way to describe that offense last year, but on paper, just the statistics, that's what they were. They threw short. They got their fair share.
The backs caught a lot of balls.
Backs caught a lot. Chris Godwin was getting a fair, good amount of yak when he was on the field, and he was the best receiver in the league when he got injured. Not a ton of deep stuff, and Liam Cohen was using that Sean McVay system and also taking what was there. But Baker Mayfield was very comfortable in that, and he liked his 71.4% completion rate.
And he liked his 41 touchdowns.
Yes, and you don't get a 71.4 completion rate if you're throwing three more deep shots a game, unless you got Randy Moss out there and historic play. So, you know what? Mayfield is ultimately the guy who's got to throw that deep shot. And I'm wondering a little bit, you know, maybe Mayfield has settled into a groove where, like, we don't need the deep shots. The hell with that.
It's hard to argue with that approach. It's hard.
They want to throw more, and most quarterbacks love throwing deep, but you never know. And Tom Brady wasn't necessarily that guy. He preferred the percentage throw.
Steve, one guy we don't talk enough about, and I'm not really sure about this, is McMillan. Steve, I don't know if you were with me, but maybe midway through the season, I'm thinking, you know, this guy just looks like another guy out there. This could be a bad draft pick. I'll give him another year. I'm not going to judge McMillan as a rookie, but he doesn't show much separation. I don't see that Mayfield's got a lot of confidence in him. And then, I don't know what the hell happened, Steve, but down the stretch, I don't think there were too many more receivers that were more productive in terms of reaching the end zone than this guy in the last 5 or 6 weeks of the season. Steve, is it automatic that he can pick up where he left off? What changed with McMillan?
You know, I love when you ask me a question that I actually have the answer to, Ira, which...
In other words, it's a layup, Steve. It's a freaking layup.
But you didn't know it, right? You didn't know
that
I had no defense in front of me and I could just lay that ball in like that. McMillan did an obscure podcast called The Sports Web.
Sports Web?
Yeah. And this was just a couple of weeks ago. And I saw the interview, watched the interview, and he was asked point blank, what made, quote, the lights turn on for him as a rookie? Great question. And McMillan's take was not like a lot of the stuff you usually hear, game slowed down, all the cliches. He said, I developed a sense of belonging. I felt like when I stepped onto the field for that second half of the season, I finally felt like I was capable of anything I put my mind to. So really what he's saying is I finally became confident and became the receiver I could be. McMillan's not a big guy. He did put on a little weight this offseason. I think the cynics would say if they really loved McMillan so much, they wouldn't have drafted Egbuka. I don't buy that.
Are we really a month from training camp, Steve? We're one freaking month?
5 weeks.
Wow.
It should be a very competitive camp, which I'm really looking forward to because the reality is they're not always very competitive. And when you have all these new cornerbacks, if you've got two new corners in the draft, guys with a lot of juice in their legs, people talk about Jacob Parrish, one of the fastest guys in the draft, and you got Benjamin Morrison.
And then Hall's coming back from injury.
Exactly, and you've got him, Morrison, most people say first-round talent, just dealt with those injuries.
How hard do you push Morrison in training camp?
This is all in or bust for the Bucs, Ira. I think you have to push him hard to see what he's got. When are you going to push him, in week 3? Let's see if this guy is not brittle. They say he's healthy. He sat out minicamp with a minor injury. No, they didn't disclose that they don't have to, but he was there during the other OTAs. I think you got to push him hard, see what you got.
He's got to learn this defense, Steve.
Jamel Dean, say what you want. The guy does stay healthy in training camp. He doesn't take days off. Oh, Dean missed training camp again. No, he usually gets hurt when it's real.
And he's got some size that they don't, you know.
A lot of size. And Bowles apparently loves the size, even though he went a little smaller with his corners this year. But Zion McCollum in a contract year. You've got Jamel Dean, who is effectively in a contract year. And if he doesn't have a good camp, potentially he could get cut. There's no more guaranteed money. And we know a lot of fans driving around Tampa right now wouldn't mind seeing that.
Now, Parrish could be ticketed for nickel, Steve.
Yeah.
Could be.
But
yeah,
he may play some outside corner, and he probably will. And we don't know where he wants to play. And sometimes that can get in a player's head. But the point is that you've got four super motivated cornerbacks. Last year, effectively, you had zero. So, I mean, that changes practice, changes the dynamic of the organization. You got Egbuka is going to be going all out in these practices because he's a rookie.
And they're going against a heck of a receiver corps.
Yeah, exactly. And Evans, when he's on the field, he practices hard. He's known for that. We'll see if Godwin can even get
McMillan's
on the
McMillan's not
practice
backing
game
off anybody.
No, McMillan wants playing time. We were just talking about McMillan and where the Bucs really stand with him. I think they love him. A third-round pick, you still have to respect that the guy achieved so much for his draft status. But I like the energy of training camp coming up. And no, there aren't a bunch of linemen, new linemen in there to, you know, I don't think anybody's going to fight with Hassan Reddick.
If Dennis hurts his shoulder or Kancey hurts his calf on the third day of camp, are you just going to throw your hands up and say, I can't take this anymore? I can't handle this anymore.
For Dennis, I would. And I know Lee DeCamper would, our good buddy at JoeBucksFan.com.
He's ready to do it now.
yeah, he's done with Dennis.
He says, bring on Walker, you know.
He's rooting for Dennis, and every Bucks fan is. But with Kancey, you may have to accept that this guy's just got chronic calf issues, and they didn't figure it out yet. I wouldn't throw my hands up, but it would be sad, because it would let you know that he's probably not that.
Was it McCoy that had the same injury 2 years in a row? Who am I thinking about?
McCoy was hurt in his first
biceps, right?
First couple of years. Might have been a
pectoral?
Pec and whatever. He
I
was
thought
hurt.
It was his biceps. All right.
He was drafted in 2010, Gerald McCoy, and really didn't play a ton his first two seasons, and then was, you know, super healthy and super productive. And we saw Brian Price. Remember Brian Price? He was drafted.
They were high on him.
He was a lightning bolt. Brian Price.
Out of UCLA.
Second round pick. In defensive tackle, really, it just seemed like a hell of a player, and then got hurt, and it was never the same. So, you know, we've seen this before, but I love the competition in camp. I love the competition among the running backs, and they're young, and just even Cade Otton in a contract here, even a guy like Sterling Shepard, your buddy, who's trying to make a roster, even though he's got some guaranteed money, they're so deep, a lot of energy, and I think it's going to help out a lot.
Steve, let's talk about Otton for a second. In this regard, I wouldn't put him on the same level as a potential free agent as we've seen with Lavonne David, Winfield, and Mike Evans. He's not on that level in terms of how the higher ups look at him. Even though Light's still very high on him after drafting him, and he has gotten better. But Steve, depending on what kind of year Otton has, and maybe even Devin Culp, I don't think there's any guarantee that Otton gets a long-term contract extension. I don't think that's guaranteed.
No, I don't think so. The Bucs at some point will have to make hard decisions on somebody, and it's no knock on Otton if you've drafted so well that you've got to re-sign everybody. The Bucs may very well look at the end of the season, okay.
He's the 14th best tight end in the league.
Cade Otton is here, and he's had another solid year. We love him. 12th best tight end. And then they're looking at Logan Hall in the same eyes saying, you know what? He bumped it up to 6.5 sacks this year, and he loves the system, and he's developing. We don't want to get rid of an ascending player. Which one? We got to pick one. So that happens. And, you know, it's happened to the Bucs through this run of better play when they got rid of Jordan Whitehead. Then we hear, you know, they let him walk in free agency. Then we hear,
Is he still out of football?
Car accident, yeah. That car accident messed him up. I haven't gotten an update. I asked one person for it. I got nothing. And yeah, he's the broken neck or whatever it was. Hopefully he can make a comeback. But you remember, they let him go to the Jets 2 years later.
We made a mistake.
We didn't really want to let him go.
Yeah.
So the Bucs are primed for somebody to fall into that category. It could be Otten.
And, you know, it also shows, Steve, that the Bucs keep a flexible, open mind on players. Yeah, we want Whitehead back. We made a mistake. But then Whitehead doesn't get the job done, and we're going to move on without him. You know, they're not stuck, and that's the way you need to be as a franchise.
Yeah, and look, if Bucky Irving is banged up this year, you know, God forbid, he's banged up and plays 11 games, and, you know, and Rashad White fills in nicely, all of a sudden the Bucks are looking at, well, you know, maybe Rashad White is worth our investment, even though we could gamble in the draft and we have Sean Tucker.
He's another guy like Kate Otten. Yeah. There's no guarantee Rashad White's coming
back.
No
guarantees for a lot of guys, really. And I know fans, I think the only guy really guaranteed or with a major guarantee on him is Gedeky. They're not going to let him go.
That's right.
Especially with Jason Light's love of the offensive line. And if continuity really means something that these coaches always talk about, you can't let him go. And but I think everybody else is kind of fair game, even Zion McCollum. As crazy as it sounds.
Depending on how the rookies look, right, Steve?
If the rookies play well and Jamel Dean is actually solid, they still have him under contract.
And McCollum's asking for too much money.
Exactly. And then they tell McCollum, look, pull a Chris Godwin. If they say, look, we know you can make $21.5 million out there. Carlton Davis got close to that. And you have an offer, but we can only give you $15. I don't know what they would do. But these are all great problems, Ira.
You know, McCollum can end the suspense by picking off 5 balls this year. As the Bucks go 12-5 and win a couple of playoff games, at that point the decision's made. We got to have McCollum back. We need him.
Yeah. Well, look, Todd Bowles. What did he say when I asked him at the combine? When I said, you know, what is improvement? What does this really mean? What kind of players are you looking for to make this defense better? He went on his what now famous Ball Hawks rant. Well, it's going to be hard for Todd Bowles to read JoeBucksFan.com next year. If he re-signed McCollum for market value $20 million,
and bring Dean back,
and he's forget about Dean,
yeah,
and McCollum's coming off another one or two interception season, do you value the picks or not, Todd? Regime, you know, don't tell me you won't need Ball Hawks, and you got a one pick guy that you're bringing back for historic money.
No question about it. I can't get over that 7 interception number, Steve. And you know what? Neither does the head coach. 7 interceptions. Abysmal, Steve. Abysmal.
How much can he really harp on? Like, I know they're going to be harping on it in preseason, and in Bowles will be giving out his sarcastic comments to guys that he even started this spring, and it'll be a big focus of training camp.
Part of it is playing soft. Part of it.
But how much can you harp on it when there's other factors involved?
You don't harp on it. You change the defense. That's what you do. You make them more aggressive. Challenge these receivers. Challenge them. Not everybody you're facing is Justin Jefferson. Take it easy. And I still can't get over those games against Atlanta, Steve. I never will until they squash the Falcons in week 1.
We've talked about closing out games, but if you have a great offense and if you lead in games and the other team gets on the field, we all know, what do you need? You need a pass rush, but if you don't have one, you need those Ball Hawks to close out games.
Tip a ball. Tip it.
Well, a couple of late picks close out games, as well as a couple of rushing first downs when you have those quarterbacks under duress. You know, the Bucs just, the defense cannot be, it was just so easy. Going back and watching these games in the offseason, Ira, on the condensed games, 39 minutes a game, you just see how easy it was for so many quarterbacks. And, I mean, I feel like opposing quarterbacks, they're building confidence before they even get on the field. Oh, I watched the film all week of the Bucs. Here we go. I'm the man this week.
I'm going to complete 30 balls
today.
Yeah,
you got to get in those quarterbacks' heads on Wednesday, not on Sunday at 2:30.
And I like to get in your head on Wednesday, so it makes for a better podcast.
All right, Ira, we are out of here. Do you have any sort of a grand address for fans of football? No Rays comments. I know you got a lot of thoughts there.
I got an address.
All right.
And I'm going to make this short because nobody cares about the NBA. But, you know, I'm watching some show. I'm watching the O.J. Simpson Manhunt on Netflix or something. You know, the thing's over at 9:45. Hey, let me see what's going on in the NBA Game 6. Closeout game for OKC.
Great game.
It's like halftime, like They got a 22-point lead. What? 66, 44 or something. And I'm the only guy that does this, but I go on my phone and I look at the team stats. Let me see what's going on here. I scroll down. Now, I'm old school. I'm Jerry West and Oscar Robertson and Wilt Chamberlain. And Steve, I swear, I thought it was an error. I thought it was a mistake. I shut my phone off. I put it back on. The numbers didn't change. They had two assists at the half. Two. Oklahoma City. Two assists. Are you kidding me? In a closeout game?
All right,
we're going to say about the NBA Finals.
All right.
And I'm not sure Indiana's not going to win Game 7. Are you?
Obviously, basketball's a little too tense for you. I'm glad the season's ending. We don't need your blood pressure up.
I want a team with 11 wins. We need you like the 2025 Bucks.
We need you ready for training camp. Go Bucks.